that. Got you some seatbelt cutters. Got you a Militar. Your booty seat bag. Got your key fob back with a new tag for you. These are cable management. I can explain that. And then this is Russian moonshine.
What?
It's 90 proof, and it doesn't exist anymore. And my buddy Ray Edwards, who's like a big time, he's been known as the godfather in the bar circuit in St. Louis. This was his company. I have two bottles now left. And since we don't drink anymore, they just sit there as decorative. Now, I will tell you, this needs to be cold. Like, as cold as you can get it. If you drank it right now, you'd want to fight me because it's disgusting. But that ice cold with a little bit of seltzer over ice, oh my God. But be careful, because if you go a little, there's a fuel gauge on it. If you get a little too low, you start to experience time travel, what I used to say. It's good, though. It's good.
We'll talk about that in a second.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to The Clean Truth. I'm Don. Got a pretty cool show for you today. The goal with the Founders Lounge was always to bring in business owners and founders of different companies, franchise or not. And I don't know why we haven't done this sooner, but I've got a buddy of mine here in the studio today, Ron Holmes from Riker USA.
Uh-huh. Yes, thank you for having me.
Everybody's like looking at me. Every time I do that, they always look at me and they're like, Oh, yeah, I got to talk now. But I thought it would be cool to have you on the show. One, just because to promote your company, Riker. But then two, to talk about the kids' camps. That is a super cool initiative that I'm pretty honored to be a part of. And we'll get into that in a minute. But let's talk about Riker first. So go ahead. I mean, there's a lot of people that listen to the show that won't have any idea who you are. Probably won't even know what your product is until we explain it. So go ahead and just talk about your background and how you got to here before you started Riker.
All right. So Ron Holmes. I retired from the Marine Corps in 2010. I spent almost my whole career in force reconnaissance and then retired out of MARSOC. My primary job was communications. After that, I went into about 5 years of government service. Prior to retiring, I had multiple surgeries. So I had bilateral shoulder and elbow surgeries. So I have rubber bands. I always say I have rubber bands that hold my shoulders in, and I got screws and fishing line in each elbow. And I got about an inch of height loss. When I went into government service,
that's why you're so short.
Yeah. when I went into government service after I retired, we were doing a lot of shooting, and I found with my support arm, just from the repairs on everything, that my support arm was painfully going numb with traditional ways of holding a rifle. And I always say that, I'm left-handed, and I say that being left-handed has always been my superpower. Growing up, in a tactical, industry or an environment in the Marine Corps in the 90s, there was no tactical industry to support it. We didn't have a tactical industry until after 9/11. And it exploded. So all the stuff we had was very basic, was very cookie cutter, and was side specific to a right-handed shooter. It was very hard to find left-handed stuff. So I had to modify a lot of my gear all the time. So I took that, and I had a me problem, and I came up with a solution for myself, and I had created a couple different moldable plastic handholds that I was putting on the side of the rifle. And I found that going from traditionally what is, underneath the rifle with a broom handle, a wedge, a nub, or even doing a thumb over bore, I would still get that numbness and that pain in my arm. When I just went out to the side, because I'm no longer holding the rifle up, I'm pulling back. Because I'm pulling back, that eliminates the recoil and the fatigue. And then the standoff of the grip removes you from the heat. So no glove, no heat. I initially was thinking one-dimensional when I made this. I just wanted to shoot my AR platform pain-free. And then, my partners and I, and how we started, they were like, you should invent something. I was like, I have a bunch of stuff. And we decided to make this real. In prototyping, when we had some of our first 3D printed versions of it, we got the idea to put it on a shotgun. And then we were just like, our minds opened, and then we put it on some Scar Heavies. And then I had some guys down in Lejeune, they put it on their saw, the 249 saw, and it is a game changer. We said, heavier the gun, the higher the caliber, full auto or suppress, you'll recognize the benefit of the Ryker method of shooting instantly. So when we launched, our ultimate goal was to always put the controls for a lighter laser into the grip to remove excess things that you have to put on top of the rifle and just make it nice and compartmentalized. So if the kids now, the Thundercats now that are doing stuff, most of those kids all, the majority of them all game at some point. And one of the things that we learned in this process is the industry that has done...
Did you call it Thundercat?
Yes, yes. The industry that has done the most study on biomechanics has been the video game industry. If you look at all of the controllers, even like that Nintendo Switch and everything, they all go like this, how your hand naturally lays. So that's one of the things that we brought into that, like, was that kind of concept, because our goal in the design of it is to put multifunction options in there for multiple devices. And when we went to launch, that's why I love listening to the stuff that you guys put out. It's, one of the things I say all the time when I speak at veterans organizations is you don't know what you don't know. And I'm very fortunate that this time, this business venture I'm in, I have a team. We are all three of us are completely different. No, none of us are exactly the same. But we all have hit the same roadblocks in the way. And we were like, do we wait until we have the electronics version, or we just do it now and try to build it? So there wasn't really a right or wrong answer with that. And we just made a decision to launch. So we launched, and that this September will be 6 years we've been on the market.
Didn't you call it something different?
What? We did. So
something fish or
something? It was called the Fish Grip.
Yeah.
And, and none of us really, really loved that. But we were on the market two, three weeks, and we were going to our first vendor event down in Georgia. And we got a phone call, and this company is Honor Defense, and they were like, hey, we have a competing product. And our trademark, it went in before yours, and we trademarked the word fist as an acronym. But this was a pistol accessory. Ours is a rifle accessory. And they told us that, like, would you guys be willing to change it? And we're like, how are we hurting your sales? Nobody even knows who we are. We've been on the market 21 days. And so get to the end of that. Basically, it came back. Our lawyer was like, 30 grand. He's like, 30 grand to go to court and win and tell them whatever, or 30 grand to go to court and lose. He goes, either way, you're out 30 grand. And he's like, and we're like, or, he goes, or you can change the name. And we're like, yeah, let's just call it the Ryker Grip. And it just kind of fell on it that way. So, that's how we ended up with that. So, yeah, 3 weeks, and we got our first cease and desist letter, which...
Nature of the beast, man.
Yeah, but now the thing is, I don't even think that company's in business anymore, which I don't wish ill on them at all. And I understand the pride and ownership. Literally, their trademark went in 4 months before ours. And just lessons learned on that stuff.
So I think I know, but you came up, Ryker is named after your son.
Yeah.
We came up with it.
So in this process, when we started the company and we started making prototypes and trying to figure out our pathway forward, we had an LLC, and our LLC's name was Shipmate, and my two partners are retired Navy guys. So when you're aboard ship, everybody is shipmates. We're all shipmate, but it's become a very derogatory term. It's just like, hey, shipmates, like just calling someone an asshole. Like, so we named our company Shipmate because we thought it was hilarious and had a very nautical thing on it. When we changed from an LLC to a C Corp, we couldn't keep the same name. And we were trying to figure out our name. And I don't know the reason why or not. I didn't ask. And
that's what I was just getting ready to ask. I don't know why.
I don't remember.
Because we've done that, kept the same name.
Yeah. I don't know. But maybe Josh just didn't like, maybe my partner didn't like Shipmate that much. But so Ryker had just been born, and they called me one day, and they're like, hey, he goes, we came up with a name for the company. And I was like, oh, what? And he's like, we're going to call it Ryker USA. And I was like, let me check with Tracy. Tracy was like, what? So it's grown like that. Now Riker's getting ready to be seven, and kid wears this with pride. He's just like, just loves it and has his own label and everything. So that's kind of cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. I didn't know that you had, I didn't know this was wired to lights and all kinds of other components.
This one isn't. So we released that. We announced it on our 5-year anniversary last September, and we started shipping in January, mid-January last year. So right now we have single lead light option, which works with a Surefire tail cap, the Surefire light system, and we have the single lead laser option, which works with a crane type connector. These are both kind of standard, and for the people that don't know, to help you out, Surefire lights, there's a couple videos I've done, instructional videos, because there's a way to get around, there's two adapters you can get if you don't have a Surefire light, and that make it work with a Streamlight. And the crane type connector works with the military lasers that they all use, the App Hills, and it also works with all of the HoloSun products. So the HoloSun lights and light laser combinations run off the crane type connector. So you can now, with the Riker control, is you can now plug your crane type connector into your HoloSun device and have it, depending on what you have the device selected to, you can operate all three things: visible laser, IR laser, or white light, or IR light. So four things, yeah. Just depending on the device. And then we have our sling. Our sling is a retention system. It's built to keep the rifle tight to your body, but it has the bungee or the elastic built into the body of the sling, so you don't ever have to loosen it to come up on target. You can just grab the pistol grip and the Riker grip, push out, and just the sling will actually pull the rifle back into your shoulder. It takes even more pressure, more weight off of the rifle, and just makes it a lot more secure. We had that when we kind of stumbled
which
on,
for reference, the other way is a major pain in the ass. I'm just going to throw that out
so
there.
So in reference for primarily like for law enforcement. So law enforcement, they get out there, say they're sitting on a target. They're waiting for a warrant. They get a squirter. The dude runs out. They loosen their sling. They run after him. They get him on the ground. Now they're like trying to tighten their sling, or they just let it go. So now you have your rifle hanging down. And you're trying to manhandle the suspect, and you know the gun's in the way. Now I can drop that rifle, transition to pistol, or transition to medical, or hands-on for whatever, but the rifle stays nice and tight to your body, which is good for, you know, moving over obstacles, moving in and out of vehicles, through buildings and stuff like that. And we kind of fell on that on accident, and it just kind of worked seamlessly with the grip. We like to remain innovative, so we gave our version one of our sling to the top tier special operations guys. They came back with, they were like, dude, we loved it. You guys have mastered that bungee, that retention system, but the sling's too heavy. It's too bulky. There's too much plastic on it. And they're like, we can't order it. And I was like, okay. And they're like, sorry, man. I'm like, why are you sorry? It's like, you just redesigned my sling. So we took all that information and we changed manufacturers of our sling. We have three manufacturers. Two of our three are veteran owned. One's in Texas and one's in Gastonia, North Carolina. And we sat down with our manufacturer, Wilder Tactical in Gastonia, and redesigned. It took us probably, I would say, 4 months, based off of their feedback to narrow it down. I think I have probably about 15 prototypes on that one. And we got a couple other things too. We got the one thing that we also just released when we released the control is our cable management system, which comes in a 3-pack. So this, even whether you're using a Riker control or not, these clip onto the top of the Picatinny rail that's standard on majority of rails. But we have these tracks on the inside where you can run your cables through, so you don't need to use tape, zip ties, and rubber bands. These things just clip right on. They're nice and solid and, you know, branded and everything. So that also doesn't, you know, there's nothing really else like that on the market. But so we've everything except our DC mount is ambidextrous, and to include the M-lock mount, the traditional Riker grip, and the Riker control, and the Riker sling comes with the built-in retention and comes with standard with the QD mounts. You know, for front, and it's set up to be run as a 2-point sling.
So let's talk about marketing and growth for a minute, because I know you and I have had this conversation before, but we've never talked about it like this. So a company like yours, and I'll use Montana Knife Company for another example, that are friends of ours, they can't do traditional marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Social media, and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but the government does not let you guys market your products online. They can't just go out and do a paid ad, you know, with a Ryker grip on an AR-15. It doesn't work. So talk about some of the out-of-the-box, like, things that you guys have done to market to grow. Because it's very hard in that industry with knives and any kind of weapon, things that can be considered weapons.
So the knife thing is relatively new. They went after them, I want to say maybe they got thrown in it with us about 2 years ago. And I don't even know so much as that. It's the government, but there's probably heavy influence in it. But it's the personal opinions of the social media entities like Google, you know, Meta, all of them. So had we gotten in like a year prior than when we actually started, we probably would have been grandfathered in a lot of the stuff where you see some companies can promote. But if you, when we had started,
what do you mean?
There's some companies that can promote with rifles and stuff, and they get away with it because they've been doing it for, they were in it before the policy changed. So they were kind of grandfathered. But then there was another thing that we read up, is if you were spending $80,000 a month in ad spend, you could promote whatever you wanted, basically. But we weren't really set up to do that. So they do everything they can to throttle you. And, you know, we've grown our Instagram organically, and it's not a very big account, but we haven't paid for followers. We're over 10,000, which isn't a lot, but it's real followers. It's, you know, we actually had a company running our stuff for a while, and they went through and they were like, this is a legit account. You guys only had like 150 bot accounts on there. So they cleaned that up for us. And then we got over 10K a year ago. But the thing that, you know, I went grassroots with it. You know, both my partners have real jobs, and I'm the retired stay-at-home dad, and I'm the road warrior. So I would find vendor shows, and I would try to get a vendor show in a month, and all up and down the East Coast, and just set up and promote. And it's even still to this day, I'll do a vendor show, some that I've done multiple times or even new ones, and I'll have people come up, and it's like, I've never seen this. This is really cool. And the other thing too is, you know it looks different. And we say we love a skeptic, and people come by and they're like, oh, I saw this and everything. And then I put my AR-10 in their hand, and I have them, we call it the aha moment. I have them hold it traditional like this or thumb over bore and just hold it up there. My AR-10 is super heavy. And I said, now grab the grip. And then you see them and they're like, they can't even hide it. They're just like, holy crap. It just changed the whole weight of the gun. So our biggest, you know, We've done everything. We hired a media company to help us with the launch and everything, and I actually think that hurt us a little bit. We hired this other veteran-owned company that had a really great cookie cutter format that worked. They did Black Rifle Coffee, they did Brute Force Sandbags, they did a whole bunch of other companies, and they had this plug and play thing. And they were like, we are guaranteeing you a 3-to-1 return on ad spend in 90 days. And we're like, what happens in 90 days and on day 91 when you haven't hit it? They're like, we've never taken 90 days to get there. We're like, okay. The highest they ever got us, they said, we work for free until we get it there. The highest we ever got was 1.75. Yeah. So we hit a point where we're like, let's not waste your time anymore. We broke away. And then, you know, we had a social media company that these guys we had for the last year, they were really good. They helped us with their content and the flow, and it took it off my plate, and that helped. But the thing is even with like the Instagram and growing the following and really putting out good content, it doesn't necessarily translate to hits on the website and sales. So we're still on the struggle bus for the marketing. We've even tried things, doing ads, not even mentioning gun, rifle. and not even having the product in there. Just like, it was actually, there was one, just me walking in the woods talking about, wouldn't you like something to help you do your job better? Wouldn't you like something that if you had an injury would help you, you know, not be in pain? Didn't mention anything at all. Right. And I don't even think I mentioned this, and it ran for, I think they had it up for 24 hours and it was a violation of their standards. Yeah. So we hit a point where it's almost like that line from Blade where he's just like, you know, some people are always trying to skate uphill. That's kind of what it started to feel like. So we just, I just grind it out and, you know, do the vendor shows and, you know, go do the big ones, like do SHOT Show, and I'm just going to keep chipping away until I can get it in Keanu Reeves' hand or Jack Carr's hand, or, you know, and get Jack Carr to put in his next book, or, you know, I don't know. But I know that, and the cool thing is like, you know, the network that we're part of, like seeing Josh and how Montana Knife Company has grown, but the thing I think that's helped them is whose hands he got it into. And that's helped him tremendously. And I think that's phenomenal. And that's where we're still, you know, we've had some good success on certain avenues with certain, I don't say influencers, but certain legitimate people in the industry. And it's helped tremendously, but it's just, we're still, you know, and the other thing too is I remember early on it was Tony, Real World Tactical, the big Marine. Yeah. He was giving us a lot of advice in the beginning, and he said, he goes, whatever you do, he's like, don't pay to be in a magazine. He's just like, it's not worth it. He's like, you know, lessons learned on his end. He's just like, it's not worth it. He's like, you see these companies that are doing it, they're spending a lot of money. They're not getting that money back. So we've been in a bunch of magazines. He goes, just wait. And so we've had a ton of articles written. We've had a bunch of reviews, YouTube videos and stuff like that. So one of the things that we like to do now is try to hit up vendor events that are also geared towards the YouTubers. And you're seeing a lot of that now. Like the YouTubers are like the one of the big promoters in the industry of getting stuff out there, because it's crazy, like the following that these guys have. And you go and you look at their following, but you look at how many views are on their videos and stuff like that, and it's like, geez, you know, for me, when I'm watching YouTube, it's like, with, you know, right now we're just watching outdoor stuff, me, Riker, and I, but I'm not really,
you just go down wormholes, man.
Yeah, I'm not watching so much gun stuff.
I think we talked about that in a meeting that we had last week about this and some other projects that, you know, I started a YouTube channel probably a year ago, and it's a bitch to run that thing every day. And some of those bigger pages on those bigger companies like that have monster followings, it's a full-time job for somebody just to run their YouTube channel.
Yeah. You know, somebody told me, and I don't know how true this is, but somebody told me a few years ago, the person who runs the social media for Glock makes $150,000 a year and has
Madison earmuffs it.
And but has like 20 people underneath them. And but they cover every single thing they do. And that's like worldwide. And I don't know how true that is and everything, but it's you know, you think about that and you think, you know, even for us, like when we launched this, I mean, you think about how fast social media has grown in the last 5 years, in the last, like, you know, 10 years. And, you know, even like with 3D printing, when we started 3D printing wasn't what the industry is now. The 3D printing stuff now is actually stronger than the injected molding stuff. So just, and that just has to go with the technology, with the materials and how the design. And the cool thing with the 3D printing stuff is that you can just make minor tweaks and everything. Like, we're actually working on a project to put the controls for the e-collars for the dogs into the grip. And we have two working prototypes in place right now. So that's one of the other things they're working on. But yeah, other than that, it's been packing up my truck, you know, registering, driving, and setting up. And, you know, I'm a traveling salesman, I guess.
I think it's going to get worse. I don't think it's going to get any better
for social media.
I think they're going to keep continuing to push back and not let these companies market products like that on the internet and other channels, which is a scary, scary thing. And you know that, you know, did they pass the red flag law now?
So
is that done?
No.
Is that a very scary fucking thing?
Red flag laws are individual to the state. There are 11, it could be more. A year ago, I was actually researching this for one of my clients who's on the board of education here. And there's 11 states that had red flag laws. Connecticut and California originally called them extreme protection orders. And each state is different. Florida actually has a red flag law, which when I read that, I was surprised. But it's not super bad. But the premise of a red flag law, it's called red flag law because if, you know, like, oh, don't go out with that dude. There's a lot of red flags there, you know, that kind of thing. And so that transitioned over into it.
Well, it originally started with veterans.
For
the veteran community coming back from deployment.
Yeah,
and being so mentally unstable.
Everything that I read on the red flag laws was you could be at work and an employee could go to the boss, the head of HR, the head of the company or whatever, and be like, I don't feel safe around this person. I walked by, they were looking at this on their phone, or they had this sticker on their car. I don't feel safe. I think that they're a threat. They're a danger. I think that something needs to be done. So then that boss now, because this person feels that this is a credible threat, the boss has to fill out this form and then they take it to the judge. And if you have enough as evidence, then the judge can issue the red flag on that individual. Here's the part that's worse than like getting a summons for a restraining order. A red flag law, I didn't see anything that said different on this, but you don't get to know who your accuser is, or you don't have a right on it. Your due process is eliminated. It's very Patriot Act. You're almost treated like a terrorist, where you have no constitutional rights. They can kick your door in and they can seize all your assets. And so the red flag law, I understand where people, if you're looking at it in the fact of gun control, or you know, this and the other. I'm not a fan of gun control. I'm just using it as a reference. It's
anybody listening to this, I think would figure that
yes.
out.
Yes, but it's being targeted towards firearms and trying to just be their other avenue where they're going to cripple our Second Amendment right and our birthrights. So. It also has, you know, I don't think there's no place for it at all. When you start removing people's birthrights of the Constitution, it should never even come up. It should not even be a policy. When I was young in the Marine Corps and the Patriot Act was signed, I was like, oh man, this is great. But then I went to college and I have a degree in Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And I started reading the Patriot Act and I'm like, holy crap, this is horrible. But it's scary.
That's a whole other podcast. That's, won't put out a wormhole on that one.
But I agree with you that I think that it's not going to get any better. We've tried dabbling in Twitter. People don't go to Twitter to buy products. I've also been hearing, and I looked at it's a tab on my computer. I just haven't really dove back into it yet, but a lot of podcasters are switching over. They're pushing to Rumble because the YouTube is monetizing them and removing videos. Like Theo Vaughn had Robert F. Kennedy on, and they removed the monetization and then they strangled his account until he took it off. Sean Ryan is doing the same thing. He's going YouTube and Rumble.
That's a scary, scary thing.
Even
man.
Russell Brand. Russell Brand's, I think he's 100% Rumble now because they did like a Joe Rogan thing.
Well, I know
him.
A lot of guys are going to their own platform. They're just starting a website, putting their own shit on their own site.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into these kids' camps, man.
All right.
You and I were at Winter Strong this past February, which I've explained what Winter Strong is on the show. It's an annual event through Soarin' X that kind of merges the strength and outdoor communities together. It's a VIP event at Burton. The guys at Sorenex put on every February. Stupid incredible event. Probably one of the best ones that I go to all the time. It's what I look forward to every year. But we were there this past February having a cup of coffee. I remember this conversation. And I was telling you about a farm that we bought, property that adjoined to ours. And one of the things that I wanted to do when I bought this property and that I had an idea for was to put kids camps together underneath the Clean Eats Foundation. And the basis of the camp would be, it started out as childhood obesity. That's what me and Yvonne started the foundation for. It's something that's always been very important to us. It's married to our brand. It's something that we promote pretty heavily throughout the year anyway. But then I started thinking I could take this one step further. And there is a lot of things that young children, right, wrong, or indifferent, they just don't get taught anymore. They just don't. Cell phones, computers, tablets have just taken this over. And, you know, I'm not saying that there are kids that still learn it, which I think is great. And unfortunately, you have organizations like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts who have gotten a bad rap over this, that, or the other thing over the last decade. I won't even get into all that. But my point is that a lot of this shit doesn't get taught to kids anymore. You know, things like changing a tire, learning how to start a fire or a campfire, or even emergency response stuff like you did in this last camp, which I thought was stupid, incredible. You know, taking them to the 911 center and teaching them where their phone calls are going if they have to call 911, and then how to talk to that person, and then going to the, I'm getting goosebumps talking about this. That's how intense I get when I talk about it. You know, going to the sheriff's department and seeing the SWAT division and some of the tools they use, and how to talk to those guys if they ever encounter them. Just things like that, I think, are invaluable lessons now, especially now in the world we live in today. And then you just ran a test pilot. When was that?
June. Yeah,
2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Which was freaking amazing again. But talk about that for a minute, and then I'll get into kind of what I think is going to happen here soon.
Yeah. So, I say Winter Strong is my New Year's. I missed the first one because I was at an event for Riker, and it is amazing to the point where my wife and son came out last year, and Tracy looks at me Sunday morning. She's like, I get it. She's like, I'll be here every day next year. Like, this is, and I'm going to camp. And I'm like, whoa. I'm like, wait, I need to record that. But
I can't get everyone to go. She's like, that's the boys' thing.
When she said camp, I'm going to be renting an RV like you did. So
I'm bougie.
But, I'll tell you, so we homeschool Riker. My wife used to be a teacher, and my life experience has value that I can add to my son. And I look at how my father brought me up and the stuff that he and I did when I was super young. I don't trust society enough to put them in care, or put my son in care or in their charge to influence him. I don't. God has been removed from school. Any sign of patriotism is borderline, you know, like something's wrong with this kid. So that's one of the things that led us to, like, you know what, my wife works from home. I'm a retired stay-at-home dad. Let's do this. So a lot of our friends and my niece and nephew, they would always be at the house, and their parents would, you know, pick them up, and they'd see us next day or days later, and they'd be like, dude, you need to make a camp. Like my kids came home, they're like, learn how to start fire, learn how to look at, read a compass, they're tying knots, they're like doing all this stuff. And I was just like, I'm not doing a camp. I'm like, no, that's just every day in our house. That's how we do things. My dad passed away in November, and it was hard. Still hard, but I think it was probably, I don't know, maybe January is when I think I woke up and I was like, I just say it was like God put it on my heart, is like, you're doing a camp, and it's how I keep my dad alive. But all I did was sit there and kind of everything I did with Riker and the stuff that I wanted to do and I hadn't done, and or I was kind of waiting till he was a little older. Some of the stuff, taking Riker to the 911 center when he was 4 years old, was not, it would have been a wasted day. But so I stepped up at Winter Strong and gave a hip pocket, you know, 50-minute class on preparedness, and then that's when we started talking. And yeah, so that was I remember the thing you asked me. You were like, "Well, where are you going to do this?" And I was like, "Probably at my house." And he's like, "Well, how big's your yard?" And I was like, "I don't know, 3/4 acre." He's like, "How's 180 sound?" And I'm like, "Whoa, that sounds really a lot better." So, yeah, so I started to plan it, and I wanted I fell on the name Life Skills. Now, I guess there's a couple other things out there very similar themed. Ours is Life Skills Academy, Life Skills Academy, North Carolina. And what I want to do is I wanted to focus on God, country, family. And this camp is for boys and girls. And I'm very specific in the verbiage that we believe in the traditional family, a man and a woman, and there's two genders, boys and girls. And I want, you know, when I brought this to the veterans, the Veterans Business Collective I'm part of here in town, I brought it to them as like, the one thing that we're taught in the military is don't come at me with a problem unless you have a solution. And my theory on this was that the problem is that we as adults, we as veterans, we as community leaders, we as leaders in industry, we have failed our children. We have failed for years. It's like we have allowed the government to hijack the school system. We have allowed the government to hijack the sports arenas for the kids. And it's a problem. And we're seeing it now with all the social unrest we have across the country. So how do we fix that? Well, we start making victors out of victimhood mentality. We make these kids self-reliant. We make them assets. You know, I know all of the kids that attended our camp. Yeah, I got 6-year-old kids that are an asset in their family, and they're probably the strongest asset in their family because they have so much courage and they have confidence in themselves, and they have the ability to problem solve, critical think. And these are the things that we wanted to teach in this while having fun. And I just started looking at what could we do to make an asset to the family. So we started out with situation awareness, self-defense. So this isn't to teach a kid any type of martial arts style. Is to teach them that you are not going to overpower a full-grown adult. Go for soft target areas. Go for the throat. Go for the neck. Go for the groin. These types of things. Then we taught them how, if someone was on top of them, how to get away. So that's all good, but I wanted to get on the cognitive level, so I took a bunch of my son's little toys and we put them all around the MMA gym. So when the kid was sitting there and they were shrimping, they were getting away, they would get up and I'm like, go find a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So now they're like, their heart rate's up, and now they're running around the room, and they're like, now I've got them.
They got to think under pressure.
Now I'm going to think like that. And they love that. So then we left there, we had lunch with you, and did the nutrition class, and then we went to Canines for Service, and the kids became professional dog walkers, but they understood the importance of volunteering in the community and helping somebody out that you'll never meet and doing something for somebody who's done something for you that they'll never meet you either. And then we get back to the house, and my buddy who's a Marine, who's a flight medic, had the ambulance in my driveway. So the kids are like, oh, and they're like in the ambulance and everything. So then we started the medical training. We started teaching them how to clean wounds because they got med kits. We started teaching them how to do splints and how to treat snake bites, which is something you need to be concerned with in Eastern North Carolina. And then we started doing the fire starting, teaching them how to do the fire starting. The next day, we did the 911 call center, the ERT, and then we went to Wrightsville Beach Fire Department. And the one thing I learned with that is that probably was the least thing the kids are super interested in. And I didn't think about this until I talked to my wife and the moms, but the kids get firemen at the school every year. So the one thing that they did get to do was shoot the water can fire extinguishers. That was the highlight of it.
Damn it, I missed that part.
And But the cool thing, like the 911 call center is, I told the kids is, you know, it's like, you know, we didn't always have color TV. It's like, we didn't always have cable. We didn't always have iPhones. We didn't always have 911. I remember it was, I think it was probably like 1976. And my dad and I were, my dad was a cop at the time. We went to Cromwell, Connecticut to the Kmart because they had the best stash for Star Wars toys. So I was going in to get, I don't know, whatever new figures we could find. And we're coming out and a car accident happened right there, you know, with us. And I was 6-7 years old. And my dad was like, hey, go to the payphone and go call 911. And he was sitting there. He was taking statements. He was helping him out. And there was three phones. And I remember his 911 was relatively new. Call 911, busy sign. Use the X phone, use the next phone. I go back to my dad and he's like, did you call 911? I was like, yeah. He goes, what'd they say? I was like, it was busy. He goes, and then he's arguing with me. He's like, what do you mean it was busy? Did you call the right number? I'm like, 911, dad. Yes. Like, you know, but so I tell the kids that. And the thing that I learned that I thought was fascinating is that those people who run that, and I don't think the majority of society understands this, that, but that's 24 hours. They do 12 hour shifts. There's so much decompression built into there for them, but they do 250 training hours, like per 10, before they ever sit at the desk for real. And that I have a lot of respect for. That was to me, I was just like, and then there was that robbery happened when we were there, which the kids, I saw some of the kids the other day, they're like, dude, that robbery was so cool. Getting to hear that, getting just to hear, see her talk back and forth. But the next day was the so there's a veteran organization here in Wilmington called Freedom Sailing, and they have a trimaran and they take veterans out and they teach them how to sail. And so Josh and I sat down and he's like, yeah, I'm all in. He goes, hey, have you talked to the Coast Guard? And I was like, no, but I will. So I went and knocked on their door, and they went over the top for us.
I missed this one too. I was pretty pissed.
Yeah, because this day was epic. So the South, and it honestly, it had me kind of like thinking like maybe I should have joined the Coast Guard, not the Marine Corps, because this little island that they have at the south end of Wrightsville Beach, they have their own little private beach. They're all sworn federal law officers. It's like, it is actually, I learned a lot. So we broke the camp into three teams. So one team went out for about 90 minutes on the trimaran with Freedom Sailing and learned how to hoist a sail up and down and tie, work on tying knots. And then the other team was on the Coast Guard ship and went out into the ocean, and all the kids got to drive the ship. They all got a few minutes driving the ship. And then the other kids were with our friend Chris Bradley, who's a private investigator. And he was teaching the kids how to throw cast nets. And we just went in a round robin on that. And then when we finished a little bit earlier, and we just let the kids just play. And the thing out of all that went on that day, at the end, when they all got, we gave them like 45 minutes and they were just in water, out of the water, I saw a tribe. And man, it made me think of Winterstrong. It made me think of how magical that is. And I got to see these kids who were six boys, four girls, and they were just a family. And it was like, holy crap. And it hit me, and I was just like, it was like one of those things where it was like, kind of like with the grip, when there's certain people who have hit me up and like, you gave me back something I lost. That's not something that you can write into your business plan, you know? And when I saw that the tribe, I was like, I had to sit down and I just sat there and I just like took it all in. It was so beautiful. And then we took them to Surf Berry, and they were sitting there and they were eating their froyo and just listening to them recap the day right there. It was like, it was so awesome. And then the fourth day was something that's, you know, near and dear to us. We went down to Jacksonville to our friends at Extreme Outfitters, and Zach and Sarah Sarah and JR put on a phenomenal day of archery camp for the kids. And I know that that was a success because it came time to leave. I was physically taking the bows out of the kids' hands. Two of the kids right now, they're working. They got little side things that they're doing all summer. They're saving up to buy their own bow. So it's you know, that didn't exist when I was a kid, you know, like that type of outlet. And, Riker got his first bow. He was using my thumb release when he was four, I think. You know, he's in a little plastic recurve, and he wanted a compound bow. And I was like, when you're strong enough to pull it back, I'll get it for you. And we were also waiting for a left-handed compound bow because he's like me. And so they had the left-handed Hoyt Cobalt come in right before his birthday last year in September. So we went down and got it for him. The cool thing with that bow, vice like the Genesis and some of the other bows out there, one, it's fairly light, but he'll have that bow. It goes 5 to 55 pounds. So he'll have that bow until he's a teenager. And so it was worth, like, with everything, it was worth the $800 investment because I'm not going to have to buy another bow for 10 years. But the kids absolutely love that. And then the final day was where we got to go out to the farm. And we had gone out before, and I made five different land nav courses, 5 points at each. And and we made up the sheet. So we broke the kids into teams of two. And they had an adult with them taking them through. So they got to each checkpoint. So what they actually had to do, they had to learn how to land navigate cardinal direction. So they all were given a compass. So we didn't make it very hard, but we wanted them to understand north, south, east, west, you know, and we gave them a number so they could look at the number on the bezel, and they get there and they had their color flag that they had to look for. And when they got there, the adult with them would tell them what tasks they had to do. They had to clean a wound, put a Band-Aid on, make a splint, make a field expedient tourniquet with the backpacks they were given, start the fire, and, you know, do that. So we had three teams doing that. And then we had the other team we had at the house, at the farm. We had rented a car for the day, which is funny, is that Budget just called me, right? That's who called me when I was in the lobby, right? When we walked in. I had rented a Charger, and that, like that, I don't know why, but your limo van and that Charger, the kids were just like, the kids were fighting because they wanted to ride in the Charger from my house out to the farm. But so we were doing the land nav, and then you and Chris were in the garage teaching the kids how to jack the car up and change the tires. So all the kids got to change the tires. And these are just little life skills. And so we threw a bunch at them that day. So then we took painter's tape, and we also now, because the theme that we started with was situation awareness, self-defense. And we want these kids to understand the importance of situation awareness. And we talked about it all week. And we talked about adding value to your family and adding value to your parents if you have younger brothers and sisters, and things that you can do that you'll see that your parents might not see because they're focused on the road in front of them. They're focused in like a 15, 20 meter, you know, bubble around you when you're out, but you might see something that's 50, 75, 100 meters out that is a perceived threat. So we taught them how to break out of restraints with the painter's tape. I didn't want to go zip ties, and that'll be like the next phase of the camp. But then we put them in the trunk of the car, how to break the restraints, and then had them taught them how to break out of the, you know, because all the new cars have that glow in the dark handle to pop. Then the thing that I think is extremely valuable is you see a lot of these companies out there like seatbelt cutters and this, that, and the other, and they're like, oh yeah, you see them reach over into their glove box and they get it and they cut out. I'm like, oh cool, that's awesome, except for when you're
upside down
side or upside down and now you can't reach that or you're injured. So I did a video of this, I think, on the Instructor One page, but I have taken the Rescue Me seatbelt cutter, and I take those thin pieces of Velcro. We have them on our all our seatbelts, and we run the key ring through them. So this way it's in the center. So if I'm upside down, one of my arms, I can get it with both arms, just pop it off. So we got, I think I had ordered 300 feet of seatbelt webbing. We cut the straps. And we had the adults in the back, and when it went tight, the kid would have to pop the seatbelt cutter off, cut it, And then we were holding a book up so they could practice using the glass break sensor and, you know, break and rake the glass out and then crawl out the window. And they all got seatbelt cutters. The reason I went with Rescue Me is I had four different seatbelt cutters that were out there on the market. And I had practiced all this with, we've been doing this with Riker since he was four. This is the one at 4 years old that he could use. This is why I went with that one. And I think this is important because I don't think people think about these things. I don't think people like have fire extinguishers in their car. I don't think they have appropriate med kit in their car. I don't think that they have a plan for, you know, that car accident, what happens, you know? These are all these things that I put together that like, I want, you know, I still have a call to serve. And I think that my call to serve is to take 25 years of my life that I did serving our country and strengthen my community. I'm an ideas guy. I'm a passionate guy. I've got a ton of good ideas. I'm not necessarily a businessman, but I believe in what I'm doing, and it's a lot of fun. And then when after Winterfong and you and I talked, and we sat down, we had breakfast that day, and we hashed it all out, and you guys came through, and it was like, you made the camp possible with all the support that you gave us for that. It took a lot off my plate. Because again, you don't know what you don't know. And this was a pilot. And I was very clear in the information packet I sent to all the parents. I was very clear about that. It's like, there's going to be mistakes. It's like, but thank you for putting your trust into me, into this. So, I feel that it was a success, especially when I get a call from one of the moms. She's like, I just thought you'd like to know. And my son came home after the second day at this camp and says, I can't believe I have to go to this lame camp for the rest of the week and I can't go back to a camp I run. I'm like, that's mission success right there.
Yeah, man.
So that's a lot.
No, it was great. I'm going to put a little clarity on the last day. Where we were doing the land nav and the tire changing and all that shit, that day was hotter than a well digger's ass. It was approximately 102 degrees. Yeah, it was in stupid hot. And here I am, I'm thinking, we're like halfway through, and we're throwing 6 to 9-year-olds in the trunk of a car. And I'm like, I don't know how well this is going to go over. Dude, we were peeling kids out of the trunk. All they wanted to do, like we pulled the car out of the garage and left it. And went on to do something else. And I'm like looking around for kids and I'm like, where the hell is so-and-so? They're over there popping trunks open. And I'm like, get out of the trunk, dude. It's like 110 degrees in there. It was crazy. They just couldn't get enough of getting out of the trunk, in and out of the trunk. I'm like, who would have thunk it? You can lock your kid in the garage and just show them how to get in and out of the truck.
I did that. We had a rental car a couple years ago and my son and my nephew were over. And I was like, you know, this is an opportunity to train. And I put them in the trunk and they did this, but it was winter. And they did the same thing. And then I'm like in the garage, I turn around, I'm like, where are they? And it's like, I can hear them. They had a flashlight and Legos and were playing in the trunk with the trunk closed. Like they thought it was a fort. So.
Well, I can't wait to keep doing them. I think it's a great thing. I think it's needed. I think that, like I said, kids don't get taught some of these life skills anymore and some of the situational awareness stuff. You know, the more that technology keeps advancing and I don't want to use the word lazy, but we kind of get unaware of our surroundings more often than not.
Complacent.
Complacent is a good word to use, yes. That I think some of this stuff is great to learn. The only thing that I want to do down the road when we get good at this is to start bringing the adult component into it for a couple different reasons. I think that there are, I'm going to use the example for men first, but I think there are a lot of men who need this. I think there's a lot of men in the world that don't know how to change their own tire. They never learned how to change oil in a vehicle. They never learned how to do any of that maintenance type stuff that we learned that was when we were at that age. It was taught to us in freaking high school. You know, we didn't get to graduate unless we learned how to do it. So they just don't do that anymore. I think it's really needed. And then not to mention the confidence piece of it for grown adults. I mean, I've been to a few of those, and I don't have an issue with confidence. I think a lot of people would say that. But I know a lot of people that do. And I know a lot of people that have gone to an event like that and they were petrified to put themselves out there. I've met them at Winter Strong and Summer Strong. Guys who go to this thing who are actually really incredible human beings and they just don't know how to tell anyone,
mm-hmm.
show anyone, because they just shell up. And then if you get them to let their guard down and start talking, you know, and share some of these things about their life, you're like, fuck, man, this is a pretty incredible human. And once they realize that they can do that, you give them freedom for the rest of their life, and they're done, and it's awesome. So, I mean, that's one thing I want to do is put one of these camps together. It starts with the kids. I firmly believe that. But then I think down the road, I want to incorporate adults into it. And another good idea that we've thought about, and we've talked about this, is doing one where the parents participate in it with the kids to create a family or like a team type of environment. I think that would be really, really super cool to do all of this.
Yeah, that's one thing that I say too. As I tell people, I was like right now, if you want to test the mettle of your family, go do an escape room. You'll figure it out in 60 minutes. You'll figure out who works well under self-induced stress, who works well under pressure, who works well under that clock. And we have in our family, we are 3-1 in escape rooms, and we are kind of mad that we have one loss. But when we talk to the guys after, they're like, most people don't attempt to do this with two adults.
Do they still have escape rooms?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We did one downtown and we did one in Carolina Beach. The one in Carolina Beach got us. It was, we needed two more adults. But that stress, that high level stress will let you, I took things different out of it. And my wife and I, we work very, very well. We can work out together. We can be around each other all day long. I'm extremely fortunate in that. But that's what, that concept is what I want to bring for the adult camps. I want to bring the family together. I want to teach them to work and problem solve together as a family, because if you're in that situation, you heard the kids say it, expect, and the kids would say, to self-rescue. And they understood that. They understood that I am it. I'm the only one here. And I think one of the things that kind of drove that home was the 911 center and then hearing Josh tell them how long it takes them to actually get there. And then we would talk to the kids and be like, okay, guys, you see how long it took us to get from here to here? They're like, yeah. They're like, I'm like, the cops still wouldn't be here. And then they're just like, oh, okay, I'm getting it. You know, they're starting to pick it up. So, yeah, I want to do the adult. I want to do the family stuff.
Yeah, I think it'll be cool. Well, man, that's all I got, man. I appreciate you coming in. This room's getting freaking hot. My boobs are sweating and everything else, so I don't have anything else.
Nah.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Till next time, guys.